And strangely enough, he does have motive.
Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G with Rum Radio and Rum Radio 94, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. And like my sponsor Harold says, the unknown universe is the unseen universe. And since I haven't seen as much as I like, there's a lot of universe out there. I would like to acknowledge WNAH, Boyd Carter and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Arkansas as a public service presentation. Alabama. We'd like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine, it's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. I have two stories in there now, so I'm going to see if they're going to print them up for me. I'd greatly like to introduce my co-host, Harold B., a family intervention specialist. He does a fine work with troubled families, and I personally believe the families are the basic unit of our society. And as the family goes, so does the nation. Harold?
Hello, everybody, and it's nice to be with you. Thanks for that introduction, Joseph. And indeed, we've got to do a better job of nurturing our families and connecting with each other. And I'd just like to take a minute to recognize that my family, my chosen family, is the family of recovery and 12-step programs of various types. And that's how Joseph and I know each other. And we both give back. My giving back is helping families and doing family therapy, as well as I've had a lot of sponsees in the past, and some of them are still alive. And Joseph's method of giving back has to do with his website and his radio broadcast, Rum Radio, and rumradio.org, and that's not a commercial venture. He doesn't make a penny from his activities. In fact, it's cost him thousands to establish the website and improve it. So I just like to acknowledge that and thank him for his contributions to recovery. The idea is that working with others is an excellent way to stay in recovery and grow spiritually. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Tonight we have a special guest interview, Ray Lynch. He's the one of the authors of Miracles in Recovery. And are you there, Ray?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on tonight. And I'm sure I was reading your bio, a lot of interesting things. If you just hold off there just for a moment, and I'd like to do a little housekeeping. The other thing I'd like to do on this is I'd like to start the program off with what we have in the program called the Third Step Prayer. And I'll tell you how this comes into play. I sponsor fellows. The website is in 100 right now. The rumradio.org website is in 145 foreign countries, including Mississippi, about 2,600 towns, cities, and villages, and 185,000 hits to the website since inception, September 10th, 2009. So a little over 3 years, 3 months. What we do with that is we're trying to get back to basics proposition in sponsorship. That's the main focus. There's a lot of other things on the website, stories, things, but that's the main thrust of it is the back to basics approach to sponsorship, which I have found personally to be the most productive. It's worked really well for the fellows that I've sponsored. But even though this thing has gone around the world, and I try to maintain as much anonymity as I can in press, radio, films, and internet. I believe that would have been in there if that was the case. This is not AA. I do not speak for AA. I speak for Rum Radio. We use the information we use and the 12 steps. We believe that's the original template of all recovery 12-step programs. That's it. This is the main template. I believe anytime you make a copy of the original, it's not really ever quite as good. So I like staying to the basic text whenever possible, and then just plug in your flavor of addiction. The point is that even though this is going around the world, if you think you could change the world, it's either romantic, grandiose romanticism or politics. You only change the world one man at a time. And that's one alcoholic, one drug addict talking to another. That's what we found to be the most effective way of getting someone's attention and getting them into the spiritual program of recovery. And having said that, the way I find my sponsees, in page 89 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, go find a prospect and start working on it. It doesn't say have a prospect find you, although that's most of the time the way it's done. I believe that you can go out and you can go get your prospect and start working on it. And the way I find my, now some people ask me to sponsor them. That's okay. I give them the same routine either way. But when I'm going to look for one, I prepare myself. As we circle up, and most groups circle up, hold hands, or they have some kind of benediction, a closing prayer, thanking God or the Spirit or your higher power that they have joined us in this community of thanksgiving for being sober. And I go around the circle when I see the fellow just got his beginner's chip, and I grab his hand. And after the prayer, I turn around to him immediately, and I ask him, have you had enough? If he was an alcoholic like me, and you tell him that, he'll know what you mean. Have you had enough humiliation? Have you had enough pain? Have you had enough? Yes. Are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? So yes or no? Yes. He's not only telling me, he's also confirming the advances to himself. And I tell him you can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit, but there's certain things you have to do. And the first thing you need to do, and I pull out, carry it with me, glancing 7 questions. Little mini 4 steps, some really good probing questions. They're on the rumradio.org website under how to find a sponsee. You can print them out. It's all in Word. Carry it with you. If you really want to find a sponsor, be prepared. Somebody asked Stephen McCovey one time, what was luck? And luck was said, when preparation met opportunity, that was luck. So when you're prepared, the opportunity will manifest itself. That's my experience. And I give them the 27 questions, and I ask them, I need these questions answered, and I need them back tomorrow. Here's my number. I expect your call. If I get the call the next day, he's taken a simple instruction, and he is ready to go. If I don't get the call, 2 things. Either he's not ready or he's not ready for me. And in either case, it's okay. I don't chase anybody. If they're ready, fine. If they're not, then they need to find someone else or find to keep coming back until they're ready to do this. You have to be ready. There's no doubt about that. And one of the first assignments I give them is that I ask them to get their home group, which is a group that they're going to go to on a regular basis, and to get a list, newcomers list, either from the chairperson, throw a list around the room, or a newcomers packet, but to get the name of 5, 10, 20, as many men as they can who agree to take phone calls, and every day for the next 30 days to call one of those men on the list and ask permission to read the 3rd step prayer. The reason I have them do that, and I always give the reason, is about picking up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help. It's hard for some of us. It's hard for me, but I find this to be productive. The other reason is that they're going to connect up with that home group. They're going to get to know his name, and he's going to go get to know their name. So now you're getting a little intimacy going. The third step prayer, or the surrender prayer, also is going to encapsulate what we're going to try to accomplish by working all 12 steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And fourthly, the fellow he's calling might have been thinking about picking up his first drink of alcohol. And when he did that, he probably will not. There's no guarantee. Your sponsee is already in service work. So I find this real productive. Now, this is the prayer. It's found on page 63 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen on that.
Amen on that.
Thank you. Well, Ray, tell us now. I was reading your bio. So you've come up through the crotch. Have you heard the Marine Corps?
Yeah. Yes, I did. I was in from 1982 to 1986, and you know, my addiction didn't allow me to go past my first hitch because I was. Going to be, I get orders to Newport, Rhode Island, and I'm originally from New Bedford, Massachusetts. I live in Florida right now, but I'm originally from New Bedford, Massachusetts, and I, you know, knew that I couldn't be a Marine during the day and a civilian at night. It just wouldn't have worked, so I chose to only do 4 years. I mean, it was probably the most structured 4 years of my life, and it probably, you know, some of the things that I learned while I was in helped me through my early times of getting clean. I'm going to use the word clean instead of sober because of the fellowship that I follow. But I can classify myself as anything. I mean, I do call myself an addict, but I fit wherever there's a meeting is where I fit because I can relate.
Yeah, I'm glad. Now you said that you. Did you have a problem prior to getting into the Corps? Did you realize?
Yeah, I think that was one of the when I was a kid, I became a commercial fisherman. You know, and you know, like you see on TV, the shows of the lobstermen and the king crabbers and all of that. I was a commercial scalloper, and drugs were very, very rampant in the city that I grew up in, and of course, you know, being the twisted child that I was, I just stepped up and was next. And, you know, it became a way of life. So in order for me to try to get away, I chose to go in the Marine Corps. And, of course, drugs followed me because I went. And, you know, so it was a never-ending battle. And I found myself in, you know, third world countries, in the seedy parts of the, you know, I didn't see the nice places. I saw the back alleys of, you know, Thailand and Singapore, and, you know, where people would be grateful to go to Hawaii on vacation. I didn't see any of the beauty because I brought me with me, and my focus was drugs and alcohol at the time. So fortunately enough, like I said, I made it through, honorably discharged, and, you know, I think it still, even though it was a chaotic time in my life, in my young life, I think it gave me a lot of discipline to be able to understand and accept any type of 12-step recovery program when I decided that enough was enough and I didn't want to die.
Oh, interesting. Now, originally I'm from Long Island, and we had clam diggers out there. Is that the
right.
same?
Yep.
Same with the scallops?
No. Well, I was out on a boat. I would go out on a boat for anywhere from 7 to 15 days, you know, dock to dock.
Different.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, the clam diggers had this small skiff. They would be in the bay, and they'd have
these whole big
kind of deal. They were really kind of robust kind of guys. But I imagine anytime you get out on the water like that, that you're pretty robust. I mean,
Well, you know, the funny thing about it is that, you know, you put that image in your mind, but when you're on a boat of 12 people and 11 of them are heroin addicts, how robust can you be? You know, you just do what you have to do to get by and get through, you know. And one of the funny things is that, you know, like, people sometimes can and can't relate to how crazy our body is or how crazy our mind is. When I used to leave the Dyke Gate, I would leave cold turkey. And, of course, I didn't feel that good, but it wasn't so bad because I knew I couldn't get at it. 2 weeks later, when the captain would say, shake them out, we're going home, I would immediately get sick.
Interesting.
Yeah, you know, and it's crazy what our mind does, you know what I mean? And I think a lot of the struggle that we have in early recovery is we don't want to let go of that mindset that kept us out there for so long because we don't know any different. You know?
So knowing you couldn't get a hold of the drugs, it kind of settled down your withdrawal, and then soon as you were coming back, you would start, your body would actually go into the craving mode for addiction.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I physically felt like I had the flu, you know, for the first few days. But you know, so I was physically withdrawing. But like they say, you know, I mean, it's a threefold disease, and you know, spiritually, I was bankrupt no matter what. But you know, physically and mentally, the mental aspect of my withdrawal didn't happen until I knew that I was heading back to the city, and that's just so crazy.
That is. It's very interesting. Hi, Harold. I would think you would find that interesting, would you?
It is very, very interesting, and things that a person would not expect to happen can happen. The most alarming example I can think of is where under hypnosis, a person's arm is touched with an ice cube. They've been told that it's a hot coal, and the arm will actually raise a blister there as if it were burned.
Wow.
The hypnosis is the power of believing and taking the logic, just believing 100%. So a blister would form even though it was just an ice cube. It wasn't a hot coal.
What do they say? There's more in heaven and earth than in your philosophy. I forget the guy's name now. Heathcliff, whatever Shakespeare said it, is Horatio. There's more to heaven and earth than your philosophy, Horatio.
Right.
New Bedford, is that where, is that Moby Dick and the Pequod? Is that the same New Bedford?
Yeah, exactly. The whaling capital of the world in those days. That was the port to leave out of. Call me Queequeg. Was, you know, we have the whaling museum in our city, and it's a nice place to go visit and you know look back at old times and all of that. And you know, it was an old time fishing manufacturing city, and you know, I don't, you know, the sad reality is that it never got out of that mode, you know, and there was always despair there in the sense of you know, impending gloom and doom type stuff, you know. It's like what was that Gulliver's Travels there, the cartoon, it ain't gonna work, I just know it. We walked around the city like that. And you know, fortunately enough, when I left to go into the Marine Corps and when I left on my little, you know, travels around the country, I get to meet a lot of different people with a lot of different mindsets than the one that I was bred with, you know. And I'm so grateful today that I could get out of my own way and experience the world. You know, I've been in 36 different countries, I think, and you know, the United States is still the greatest country to live in, not too many other people will tell you that outside of the United States, but, you know, I'm just grateful that I've got to experience other aspects of how to live and ultimately how to control life sober and clean. I mean, I've been to 12-step meetings down in Argentina. I was down there building a cellular phone system, and nobody spoke English, but I walked down into a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and all the readings were the same color, even though they were in Spanish. So I knew that I was home. I knew that I was welcome. Couldn't understand what they were saying, but I knew that I belonged just by that color identification, as well as it would have been if I walked into an AA meeting and that literature was there, because it's all the same thing, worldwide, nationwide.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, so you came out of the military, yeah, and then did you go right back into scalloping, or did you seek something else? But you still had the, you know, like the monkeys on your back. I say recovery, if you've ever heard of it, monkey might be off my back, but the circus is still in town.
Oh, no, the circus was absolutely still in town. And you know, I was the best ringleader that that circus had, you know. And I did ultimately go back to, because I never stepped away from, you know, what I did was I just changed my address to North Carolina. Because I still actively drank. I still actively did whatever drug I could find. But when I came home is when it really took hold of me and brought me to places that I didn't want to be and made me do things I didn't want to do. You know, I mean, you know, we all know the story of being homeless, helpless, and loveless, or hopefully not. We all don't know that, but that's my story, and that's the one that I have to share. And right now I'm sitting in my bedroom at home, and I right on my dresser table, I have a picture of the park bench that I used to sleep on. And I use that as a target. I use that as a target because either I'm walking away from that or I'm walking directly back towards it. Because once I lose focus in my, you know, realm of recovery, I have no choice but to repeat the burdens of the past if I don't embrace the, you know, the recovery of the future. And, you know, during that stuff that you were talking about with sponsorship and sponsorship and all of that, to me, that is the most vital point to keep me on point. You know, because once I think that I know everything, I'm walking right back towards that park bench, and it's a very easy little tool, and I share it with everyone. I go on, you know, commitments into facilities and share my experience, strength, and hope, and I let everybody know that, you know, find a target. Mine is sitting right on my dresser, and I'm looking at it right now. It's a park bench, and it has snow on it. And I remember brushing the snow off and sitting there at 3 o'clock in the morning, saying, you know, if you get me out of this, I'll never do this again until tomorrow.
Yeah, the 911 prayer.
Yeah. The 911 again prayer, you know?
And through prayer, what they say, the preamble, through prayer and meditation, you know, like, that was the prayer. Lord, I just want to get high one more time. Please don't have a police officer pull me over, and I will never do it again. And, you know, all kinds of promises. And, okay. Oh, he's just passing by. It's the guy ahead of me. Okay, off to the dealer.
Yeah, no, and the funny thing is, you know, like, you know, in early recovery, I used to be, like, agitated with my story in the sense of, why did this happen, and why did that happen, and why did this happen? And little did I know, or it took a while for me to understand that all of those little 911 prayers, you know, my higher power were putting people in my way. You know, my higher power sent that police officer to arrest me, and my higher power sent, you know what I mean? And I couldn't understand that. I thought that it was, you know, me against the world, and little did I know, he was putting all these little stumbling blocks in my way, so I had to ultimately make that serious choice, you know, either give up completely or, you know, go to the bitter ends. Fortunately enough, I was able to get out of my own way.
That's a good point. What was your jumping off point? Can you tell us? Was there one in particular, or just sort of like line upon line and precept upon precept? You came to an understanding, or did you have that, you know, the dark night of the soul, as the one guy puts it, or where it was thinking doing drugs was not an option and not doing drugs was not an option?
Well, you know, I think that I think I ultimately got to the point where I lost a lot of close personal friends. At the age of 28 is when I got clean. It was February 28th, 1989 was the last time I used any substance. And I think I really don't know. I think I got to a point of despair, but it wasn't honest, I don't want to do this anymore. I think I was just very tired of being, like they say, sick and tired. I was just tired of living on that park bench. And I knew that if I didn't make a change, I could be the next one in my neighborhood that goes, because I didn't care. And I think at that point, it was suggested to me to try treatment again. And, you know, coming towards winter, it was February, so I was already cold. I said, you know something, why not? And, you know, fortunately enough, something grabbed me and held me. Somebody suggested that I went into a 6-month recovery program, and I did that as well, because I figured the only thing that I could go back to was that park that was five blocks away from my home. And when I ultimately got into that facility, they strongly urged us within the first week to find a sponsor. So, the good addict in me, I went out and I found one of my friends. Fortunately enough, that gentleman's still my sponsor 25 years later.
Wow.
Yeah. And I walked into a meeting. I said, oh, Rick, I thought you died. He said, no, I'm alive. I'm in N.A. And I said, well, they told us we needed to get a sponsor at Harmony House. Will you be my sponsor? He said, well, you know, we can talk about that. And I went, okay, thanks. And I left, jumped in the van, went home and said, hey, I got a sponsor. Little did I know at that moment when I asked that gentleman to be my sponsor that he would ultimately save my life. He still knows me today better than I know myself. I call him on the phone and say, hey, what's up? He goes, what's wrong? I said, nothing's wrong. What do you mean? So... You know, it's funny because I didn't know who I was, and I just had the blind willingness or the blind faith to follow him because he had a little more time than I did at that point. He made me who I am. And it's funny because he knows my buttons, he knows my triggers, he knows my emotions and moods, and that's not what I intended to do. All I intended to do was tell the house that I had a sponsor, you know? And I'm so grateful that all those little things happen, and they're not little things, they're major things. That major thing, my higher power, put him in that meeting and had me blindly say, you know, like he jokingly says, you know, like a guy asking another guy to be a sponsor is like asking a guy to be your Valentine. You just don't do that, you know, because I'm going to dislike you before you dislike me. And, you know, fortunately enough, it worked. And you know, I love the guy dearly. And I told him that I have to go before him because I don't know what I'd do without him.
Interesting. Yeah, I can see we're on the same page as far as that goes. I would tell you this, I got my little diatribe on the third tradition in AA. It talks about the drug addict, the hothead, coming into AA when there was only two AA groups. One of them was having a problem with an atheist coming in, and the other group was having a problem with a drug addict coming in, a hothead. And the pristine drunks were going beside themselves trying to figure out if this drug addict was going to sully the good name of these drunks. Mm-hmm. And they didn't know what to do about it. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the alcoholic and the drug addict is always looking for somebody to look down at. And so, what are we going to do if we let this drug addict in with us? And, of course, if you read the tradition, and it's real simple, one of the questions come up when they're trying to divine this inspiration, what would the master do? That's what it's in the tradition. That's what it says. And master meaning, what would Jesus do in a situation like this? And he said, well, then, once the question was posed that way, it was simple. If we didn't let this guy in, we could be giving him a death sentence. So, of course,
right.
We have to let him in, and we have to accept him for who he is and what he is. And that's the tradition, and it worked out well for him and for AA. And now, all of a sudden, down the road, you get these people going, well, this, you know, where's your singleness of purpose? And if you're a drug addict, you need to go somewhere else, and, you know, all this BS. 75 years later, I'm wondering, what, nobody got the memo? I don't get it. I don't, you know, I don't. I just, it kind of blows me away when I hear old timers saying stuff like that. You know, to me, everyone's welcome, other than the first step where it's specifically alcohol. All the other steps are the same. I mean, so,
right,
you know,
exactly.
Big deal. What's the deal? Half the people come in now, younger kids, and the only reason they're coming in so young is because of drugs. I mean, the cocaine and the powders and the heroin slamming them down to the concrete that much, you know, alcohol is a slow blow for most. Most of the alcoholics are coming in when they're older. We're getting some kids in there, 16 years old, bona fide alcoholics. But they've done the cocaine, they've done the heroin, all the designer drugs. And they're coming in droves. You say, oh, no, I'm sorry, you can't go here. You have to go to a different place. I don't understand it. It really raised fire. I had one guy in a home group recently that said that, and the whole group just went sour on this guy when he tried to say, you should really consider going somewhere else. Like, what do you know? Who gave you the right to play God? I believe everybody is welcome in AA, and then I think it's a shame of all the breakaways. I really do. I think that kind of weakened everybody when that happened. But it is what it is. So when it comes to Narcotics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, you know, there's even Debtors Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous. There's even a Paranoid Anonymous. Did you know that, right?
I'd be afraid to go.
Yeah,
no.
Nobody else is meeting.
Yeah, I know. You know, and it's the thing about that is you know, no matter where you're going, like I said, I classify myself as an addict, but you know, I wholeheartedly belong wherever, and I will be able to classify myself as an alcoholic if I'm in an AA meeting or a cocaine user if I'm in it, because I've done that, you know, and you know, the singleness of purpose is no longer standard within the recovery community, you know. And I haven't met recently a stone cold drunk. There's usually something else that's driving that alcoholism as well. So in today's world, you know, we are garbage heads with what it is we're putting in our system. So everyone, it's an all-inclusive program. No matter where you go, no matter what A you follow, you know, I share when I go to commitments, I say, you know, I'm here, you know, representing the hospitals and institution
part of Narcotics Anonymous. And I'll tell you right now that Narcotics Anonymous saved my life, but I would be foolish to think that no other recovery program works. If someone says to you that theirs is the only one that works, back quickly away from them and find someone else to speak to.
Really? Run, do not walk. And as Joseph said a minute ago, let's not forget that Bill W. not only drank like a fish, but he took pills, and there were lots of drug problems there.
Now, let me ask you a question. You gentlemen might know a lot of AA history or Bill W. history. Do you know where he was based when he took his first drink in the Army?
No, I don't.
It was at a dance in Dartmouth, Massachusetts, which is the city that's next to mine. And the base that he was on was Fort Rodman, which is where I grew up. So he was actually living in New Bedford, Massachusetts, on an Army facility, and he had a drink at a dance in the town next to it.
Yeah, not to mention it. It sounds for me. I've read that somewhere, but it's a while.
Yeah. Well, I think they included that as part of the movie, My Name is Bill W.
Yeah, right. That was forever ago. Well, that wasn't forever ago, but, I mean, it seems like it was. When was that, like in the 90s that came out with, what was it, James Woods and James Garner, right?
James Wood and James Garner, Garner played Dr. Bob and Woods played Bill W. That was a great movie. That was really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't seen that in a while. I love watching old movies like that too, because it brings you back to, you know, even just that time and period of when it was around.
Yes, and there's a companion movie that everybody must see, and it's about Lois's story. I'm trying to remember the name of it, but it really does a great job of filling in some of the gaps. Was really interesting to see the two movies in close proximity to each other.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, my co-host on my show is in Al-Anon, and I did go to quite a few of their meetings, and it's crazy to sit with the other side per se. You know what I mean? And to understand it full circle was like, it blew my mind. Like, when I left after a few weeks of going, I had to like call my mother and I had to call my brothers and sisters again and do another amends, which I had done, you know, countless years ago, but all of that stuff came right back up, and it was like, wow, this is crazy. I mean, they deal with heavy stuff from what we went through, you know.
That's right, and I qualify for both groups also in that my parents, my siblings, and my kids all had drinking and drug problems, so I need to attend both meetings. And it is heavy duty. It is heavy duty. Being an Al-Anon, there's an addiction there. What I was addicted to is always having everybody's approval. Now, that addiction won't kill you. The addiction to chemicals will, if it's not brought, if we don't get treatment and make it go in remission through abstinence. But the addiction to having everyone's approval is very painful and really is worth the effort to try to treat that also in Al-Anon.
You know, it's funny. My mother is a recovering alcoholic. My brother is. I'm in recovery, and my stepdad, who has passed away. I was 7 or 8 years clean, and I asked my parents to give me. It must have been at 10 because they gave me a cake and a medallion. So I had my mother give me my medallion and my stepdad give me my cake. And, you know, he stepped up and he said,
my name is Bob, and I'm addicted to Alcoholics and Addicts. You know, and it made so much sense because he was in Al-Anon himself, and you know, when you can laugh at something like that, but if you have that understanding that he was so addicted to Alcoholics and Addicts, because you know what I mean, he helped out Ride for so long with the want and need to be a caretaker and a controller and all of that stuff. He just helped facilitate our disease, you know.
Yep.
Well, I've done I consider myself an Al-Anon. I tell people in the meetings sometimes that in AA that Al-Anon is postgraduate AA.
Yeah.
and to my sponsees, I always suggest, I always make a suggestion that if you really want to be an effective AA sponsor, start going to Al-Anon. Okay, but you're going to be working with a lot of drunks that have no idea what a boundary means.
Right.
So, we don't accept or give boundaries. So we have no idea about this foreign language. You know, Al-Anon is the enemy. And I personally believe every Al-Anon should have an alcoholic to take care of, you know, like...
Just to bring him down to earth a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a symbiotic. You know, we have this symbiotic relationship. You know, they kind of
yeah. So, you know, because as long as you're getting your own personal, spiritual and recovery growth out of it, then it's all good. You know, how so many are different, but we're all striving for the same thing.
Yeah, it's a spiritual. Now, you were a fireman too, right? You were a fireman at some point.
I was a firefighter in the city that I lived in for quite some years until hypertension told me otherwise. I became a liability of hypertension, high blood pressure. So the city reminded me on a monthly basis that I used to fight fires for, you know, and now I live in Florida and love life.
Yeah, firefighting's got to be tough. That's got to be a tough way. Fire is just so ferocious. I mean, to me, it's almost like it's a living entity. You know, it breathes. You know, it eats. You know, and it's ferocious. You know, like
right.
It'll eat you.
You know, it does take a certain kind of person to willfully walk into where rats are running out of. You know, so
yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
You know, I mean it. Yeah, I mean it's all good, and I mean I'm sure that put to the task, anyone, you know, and everyone can do the job. I mean, I don't think that I've ever really had a quote unquote normal job until the one that I have now. I work for I work for a urine drug screening company right now. So you know, my higher power does have a sense of humor. You know, he put me doing drug tests in facilities where people need them.
That's interesting.
Go ahead, Harold.
What's that?
I just said that's interesting, really interesting.
Yeah.
Now, you do the radio show Miracles in Recovery. Is there a book or is anything that you've written, or is this it's a radio show? And,
well, actually, how we got started, Miracles in Recovery is a radio show that myself and Ellen Arnold do right now. We are on KDWN out of Las Vegas, and we are also on Pirate Radio of the Treasure Coast. That's right out of Port St. Lucie, Florida. That's an internet radio station. We're on Sunday mornings there and Saturday mornings on KDWN. And how we got started was down here in Florida, 3 or 4 years ago, there was a serious pill mill problem. You know, it was like almost the cocaine cowboys moved into selling storefront prescriptions. And, you know, there was a serious problem, and a lot of people started getting up in arms. This one gentleman bought radio time and started his plight out on the airwaves
of how bad these places are. And the poor guy, the very first show, he was stumbling all over the place. I had been on the radio before, but never as a host or never as a, you know, a reoccurring guest. I just did spots for, I was a president of a baseball league, and every time that we had a fundraiser, I would go on the local station and talk to the local show host about what it is that we had. So I felt comfortable in front of the microphone, somewhat,
sure.
You know, and this gentleman was stumbling all over the place, so Ellen texted me and said, you better call the show. So I called in, and he wouldn't let me off the line for the hour. He immediately called me back. He immediately called me back and said, next week I need you to come in the studio with me. So I said, okay, that's fantastic. So Ellen and I went in. Within the next couple of weeks, we were on the show with him. And every Sunday night, it was down at West Palm Beach. Every Sunday night, we'd go on and do the show. It was called Doctors, Prescriptions, Deadly Addictions. And
good name.
But it got to a point where my beliefs were, my integrity was, I was questioning my own personal integrity with the conversations that we were having.
And what do you mean?
And, you know, well, what happened was is that this gentleman had no realm or understanding of recovery, and it was everybody's fault except, you know, like it was the doctor's fault. And I would suggest to him, well, maybe the doctor's addicted to money. You know what I mean? I mean, I really don't think a good doctor is going to jeopardize himself. He's just as sick as the individuals that are coming in to get the medication. You know, but he didn't want to hear that because, you know, we always put priests and doctors up on a pedestal where they always seem to fall off. And, you know, so we had that philosophical difference of opinion, and it got to a place where I was uncomfortable with not being able to voice my opinion and let it go, you know. Like we had a conversation once about bullies, and we were talking, Ellen and I were talking about, you know, bullying in school, because I think somebody had just recently hung themselves or hanged themselves, and, you know, his answer to that was, well, those kids are weak. And in my mind, right at that moment, I said, I have to go.
Yeah, this guy's,
you know. Yeah, yeah. It was
different being on a recovery radio program, isn't it?
It wasn't a recovery radio program at all. It was, you know, and so what I did was I found on the internet, I found this gentleman who was selling radio, you know, quote unquote, internet radio stations. And I bought one, and that gentleman became the producer of my show. Ellen and I sit in my house. We have all the equipment right in one of my rooms. We do the show. I send it to him, and he edits out all the ems and ums and ahs and all of that stuff, packages it up real sweet, and makes us sound intelligent on the radio.
Hey, you got to give me this guy's number. Maybe he can do anything now. Can he make me sound intelligent? That would be questions. How much?
Wow.
Yeah.
Priceless. Yeah.
And, you know, it's you know, something that the, like you said, you usually don't get callers, and you give the number out, you usually don't get callers, and I know for a fact that there are people that are listening right now that will not pick up the phone, but they may be at a meeting from what we're talking about the very next day. You know,
That's true. Yeah.
You know, and whether we know it or not, we're saving lives just by having this conversation. Or whether we ever get to experience it or not, by somebody calling up saying, hey, you know,
I hear what you're saying. What we may not ever get to experience that, but I absolutely know by this conversation that we're saving a life, if not our own, you know?
Well, that is true, and sometimes we don't get to hear. Once in a while, we will get some feedback that something helped. I had an experience one time where I try to maintain a positive attitude, smile at people, be pleasant. And one time years ago, I had been helping clean some windows on the second story, and I climbed the ladder, cleaned the window, and then it was an apartment complex. I came back a year later to help again and climbed up the ladder, and a man inside the apartment motioned to me, please come around, I need to talk to you. And I thought, uh-oh, what have I done wrong? He said, are you the guy that was here last year? And I said, yes, indeed. Now, this man was confined to a wheelchair, and he had been the previous year also. And I said, yes, I'm the one that was here last year. And I kind of braced myself for something that I had done wrong. But he said, well, I just wanted to thank you because I was, as you can see, I'm confined to a wheelchair. I have back problems. I was facing a surgery that I only had a 25% chance of surviving, and the thought had gone through my mind, maybe I should just kill myself now. God, I need a sign. I need a sign. And at that point, you had reached the top of the ladder, and your face appeared in my window, a smiling face, and that was my sign. I didn't kill myself. I just wanted to thank you for that smile a year ago. And I thought, wow, what a gift he gave to me, that you never know when something that simple is going to save a life. Another experience,
right.
I had shaking hands at an AA meeting, and weeks and weeks later, a man said, you know, I was really in the dumps, and that handshake and greeting at the door really made a difference for my recovery.
Mm.
So it happens all the time. Once in a while, we get some feedback about it, and
right.
Those two stories have kept me going for 20 years.
You know, that is the importance right there of greeting somebody with a smile when they come into a meeting, because you never know how what they've been through, why they're there, or even if they'll ever come back. And even just that simple handshake could change their life. Like I said, like just me asking my sponsor to be my sponsor changed my life, and I'll be forever grateful to him for that. You know, so it was that type of an experience, but I didn't know it at the time. So, you know, we get full of ourselves and we say, hey, you know, I'm sitting over here and I have X amount of time and I don't need to reach out. And we absolutely do.
Yeah, I think I have one story. And, I give out these business cards. I run radio cards and I have my title is Stepologist. I do that as a show. And I have the...
Mm-hmm.
The road narrows and the view does broaden. Sponsorship will look back to the future. And I really believe the future of recovery is looking back to the way the original pioneers put this thing together, where they're most productive. But anyway,
mm-hmm.
that's my take. And I was giving out this card, and this guy said, oh, you gave me a card about 6 months ago. I said, oh, good. He said, I showed it to my sponsor in Dallas, and he loved it, and it's all over Dallas. I said, well, good.
No.
I'm glad to hear that. He says, you know the part about where you have a suicide? And I said, yeah, I have that. So suicide is the sincerest form of self-criticism. It's also a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And it's also considered a slip. He says, yeah, you know where the part where you put it's also considered a slip? I said, yeah. He said, when I read that, that's when I decided not to kill myself.
Wow.
Wow, that's great.
That's crazy.
Could have knocked me over. I would have never expected
yeah.
something tongue-in-cheek like that would have saved somebody's life. But that's the way it is sometimes. We never know what little kind act we do for the next fellow when they really needed it. Sometimes, you know, you'll hear in the meeting, you'll hear God talking through somebody. That's God talking.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt. You heard exactly what you needed to hear from this guy. Unfortunately, sometimes it's the guy that you least wanted to hear it from, but he's talking to you that through this guy. And I believe that sometimes people work. God works through individuals also, like little angels. When we have our
absolutely.
Order. Yeah. You know, that we were talking earlier about the differences between the flavor of addiction, but it just says alcohol is but a symptom of the disease. Drugs are but a symptom of the disease. So why hold in on the problem? I tell my sponsees, take a look at the 12 steps. The only step one mentions the problem. The rest of the 11 steps are about the solution. We live in the solution, not in the problem.
No, exactly. And that's where we get, I think that's where we get blinded and, you know, there's a lot of, and I was just talking about this morning with someone that, you know, they told me when I first started coming around, if I wanted any type of longevity, I had to flock towards the people that had it already. If I had 4 years clean and I was hanging around with people who had 18 months or less, how valid is my 4 years in my spiritual growth? You know, so I think that what happens is in a lot of cases, for me, I'm going to say for me, but I'm going to use the word we, can get clouded in our spiritual gauge and start picking apart what others are doing other than what we probably should be focusing on. Is the word sober or clean really that important? Absolutely
no.
We are where we're supposed to be, right? And there's a lot of times where we have a lot of recovery facilities in the area that I live in Florida. And these kids don't know. And they come in and they say, you know, I've been clean for 10 days, and you see somebody with a couple, you know, with some years get all huffy, and you're supposed to say clean. Well, what does it make a difference?
They're here.
You know, what does it make a difference? They're here. And I think that's a spiritual check for me. And I think that's why that stuff happens. I truly believe that, like you said, you hear things from people that God wants you to hear. And I truly believe that all of that stuff is set up just so that I can hear it, so I can keep my perspective where it's supposed to be.
My original sponsor, Kenneth, told me one time I was going to a meeting, and I was supposed to meet him at a meeting. And I was running late. It was early in recovery, and I was running late. I didn't want to walk into the meeting late. So I decided not to go. I didn't want to serve the meeting. I wanted to respect the meeting, all of that, right? And he calls me up and he said, where were you? And I said, well, I was running late. He says, you don't get it. The only meeting you're ever late to is your first meet.
Yeah, it's true.
So now anytime I'm close to a meeting and, you know, if I'm running late or whatever, he says, as long as you make it to the closing prayer, you're right on time. And I've done that, not intentionally, but I've gone in and I've heard the last guy share. And, you know, that was the one I needed to hear. Or I came into this, I walked in at the closing prayer and had the closing prayer and I needed that. And then I had the meeting after the meeting. But I suit up and I show up, and that's made all the difference to me. You know, this is about, you know, the letter of the law bringeth death, and the spirit of the law giveth life. And the spirit of the law is to relax, be love and tolerant, clean house, and help the next sufferer. It's the simple program. It's not easy, but it's simple.
Right. We love to complicate everything. So it's not easy. But like you said, it's laid out so basic that I can follow it. And I lived on a park bench. My best thinking got me to that point. So what do I expect out of, you know, my thought process? Just that. So apparently it's simple enough to keep an addict or alcoholic or someone in recovery away from that mindset when I try to complicate myself back into that. You know, so, I mean, it works even when you don't want it to work. If you wholeheartedly embrace recovery and lose the obsession to use, then you have no choice but to express gratitude for no matter where you are in your spiritual growth. You have no choice.
I like to quote, at my church today, they had the, you know, Thanksgiving. We're coming up to Thanksgiving 2012, and I like something that Zig Ziglar, if you guys remember Zig Ziglar, an attitude of gratitude is a prayer unto God. I believe all meetings in recovery, AA and ACA, all meetings are gratitude meetings. We put different spins on it to keep a conversation going, but they're all gratitude meetings. And I believe that's where the spirit is found, the spirit of thanksgiving. That's the gratitude that we find. And if you're grateful for where you're at, because you're sober, grateful for what you have and not what you don't have, life turns out a lot different. You know, your attitude changes. You can't change the world, but you can change your attitude. That changes the world.
Mm-hmm.
My experience, anyway. Not always.
No, I mean, I think that's everyone's experience. Like you said, you know, you go to a recovery meeting, and you could be 30 people deep in that meeting. One person in that meeting has gratitude. You know that. Whether it's you or not, you could walk into the meeting in bad space, but you know that it is a meeting of gratitude because there is somebody that is grateful. And I'm always grateful. No matter how bad I feel, I'm always grateful to be able to live in a society that chooses not to mess their lives up today. You know, I mean, well, I can't really say that, but they choose not to indulge in chemicals to choose to screw their life up. They can do it in all the different ways, but.
I like to go back to what Dr. Bob said, the program. It's really about love and service. You were going to distill it, and that's, again, for any of the flavor of addiction. Love and service is the key. You're not going to get the love without conscious contact with your higher power. So I'll tell you this. When we're in the service of our fellow beings, are we not in the service of our God? And when we're in that service and in that moment, are we not divorced from self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity? And in that service and in that moment, is that not when we make our conscious contact with our Creator, who lives from moment to moment, eternity to eternity, life everlasting? The magic words in AA, fill in the blank, is action and more action. For faith without works is dead. And that's how I work my recovery. I got to be in service. I have to turn my thoughts to someone I can help. Because even after 16 years, sometimes my mind is still a dangerous neighborhood to get into because I'm prone to self-pity, self-depression. You know, woe is me. My life didn't turn out as well as I expected it to. But I know once I turn my thoughts to someone I can help, all that goes away.
Right, because it's not about me anymore. You know, and the question that I just put a question in my mind that if I have the willingness to help someone else through their uneasiness of life, it's easier for me at that point to be able to turn to somebody else and ask them to help me as well. And, you know, I think for the longest time, I always thought that everybody, you know, I had it and you didn't know what you were talking about. You know, and that's the mindset that got me to the point of, you know, homelessness, helplessness, and lovelessness. And today I cannot embrace that mindset. I have to remain teachable even after 23 years clean. You know, I come into the world today, I wake up in the world today knowing nothing about what I need to do other than the Rolodex of suggestive behavior. You know, I have to remain teachable, because if I look at something and I see a flower growing and I don't appreciate that flower growing, then what did I learn from that? Absolutely nothing. And that's how it was when I was younger. I jokingly say that, you know, like people in meetings, they say, and one morning I heard the birds singing. And I look at them like, are you for real? But that's so true, you know?
It is.
If I can't appreciate that flower growing, then why is it there? You know?
I have an interesting take. I had a sponsee, Harold knows him, and from my former health group. And I was working with him as a chronic relapse, and I got to step three, I think. We just got to step three. And I do them pretty quick. I try to get them through within 30 to 45 days. The Joe McHugh, you know, let's get them going here. You know, I have on the website, I have a guy takes you through in 24 hours, all 12 steps.
Oh, wow.
You don't have to do it in 24 hours, but at least it gives you a platform to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, we don't really have that in the big book. The word sponsor is not in the big book. So a lot of this stuff is experience. But it's good information. You know, I do the Joe McHugh deal 30 to 45 days. But I found the sooner the better. Timely. I'm not going to sacrifice thorough for time. I think timely is more important, and it seems to work. And so I just fell in. We were on third step. Walk out of, I don't know, it was a Starbucks or something. We're out in the parking lot. It was a nice spring day. Looking around, he goes, gee, what a beautiful day. Look at the sky, how blue it is, trees. I never noticed that before. You know, the guy is like, you know, 45 or something. And wow, you know, and what he was experiencing for the very, and who knows if he's ever had it before, was peace and serenity. He was available to the environment. He only lasted a couple of days sober after that. You know why? He wasn't used to having serenity. It scared the hell out of him. And what he went back to being where he was used to. I used to say, I used to live in hell because I knew where all the light switches were. And what he had to do, he had to go back to the drama and chaos of his familiar hell.
I was going to say that. What did we lose him?
We may have lost Joseph. It happens about once every other month that we're talking, and all of a sudden, Joseph is gone.
All of a sudden, he's gone.
But
and he's back. He's up. He's down.
He's back.
He's up. He's down.
He's down. He couldn't accept the serenity he was talking about. He had to quit.
He had to quit. All right. He couldn't accept the serenity. He's still struggling. The guy said he got drunk one time, he's in my neighborhood, and you know, and I do what I can. I wave to him. I'll stop every so often. We'll chat with him, and you know, and try to explain to him. You know, I think he's finally decided he is an alcoholic. You know, I think we got that. We got that hurdle out. But he just can't imagine never having another beer. That never, I said, you know, you don't have to think of never. Just think of today. You can do it today. You know, don't worry about tomorrow. Let's just handle today. But he can, in his mind, he can't conceive of never having another beer. He just can't do it. And it's a shame. And I said, you know, kiddo, maybe this is the way it's going to be for you until life on life's terms gets you interested in doing the rest of the work. If it never does, well, then it never does, you know. But we love you, you know, and I'll be there if you're ready. When you're there, I'm ready for you. Otherwise, you know, do what you do, and you're going to get what you get. So I do the best I can with what I got. Do you have any last words, Ray? Do you want to tell us again about the Miracles in Recovery show, or where we find you, and how we get you on the internet, and all that?
Okay, the show that I host is Miracles in Recovery. It's myself and Ellen Arnold. We are heard on KDWN. You can hear that's KDWN 720 AM out of Las Vegas. We can be heard in Los Angeles, Phoenix, San Diego on a good day, San Francisco on a good day. But
wow,
we cover a lot of area. It's a 50,000 watt AM station, so it's got a really big bang. And you know, so we cover a lot of distance. It's on Saturday mornings at 4 o'clock Pacific time, 7 o'clock Eastern time. And it's
an
hour
show. Can I get to you on the internet? Do you do a live stream?
You can do it. It's www.kdwn.com, or you can even listen to it on TuneIn Radio, the KDWN on TuneIn Radio. Now, we're also on Pirate Radio of the Treasure Coast on Sunday mornings at 8 o'clock on the 8 o'clock and 2:30 on the U.S. feed, and 2 o'clock and 8:30 on the Europe and Germany feeds.
Oh, cool.
And you know, we have a call-in show. You can by all means call in. We take few calls, like what we talked about earlier. You know, everybody doesn't like to share their despair over the airwaves, I guess. But we do take a few calls, and we you know, we figure them in and we put them in with the show, and we try to, you know, get a little bit of productive, suggestive behavior out of it. We do have a website. It's miraclesinrecovery.org. Now we're starting a 501(c) right now, so I'm rearranging the website. And what we're doing is we're going to take donations and money to put recovery literature into prisons, jails, and state-run facilities that can't afford to do it themselves. Now, it's going to be a nationwide thing, and we're going to have an application as to where you can put in an application and say, can you send 4 books to Johnsonville Prison in Chicago, Illinois, and we'll do that on a monthly basis. We have a board that we're putting together to make all the decisions as to where we're going to generate the funds and how they go out, and you know, because there's a lot of facilities out there that don't have recovery literature within them, and you know, I think it's very important, if you're locked down, to be able to grab some type of recovery book to be able to look at, because we know that 85% of the prisons and jails are full of bad check writers. You know what I mean? It's all, the majority of what they do is alcohol or drug-related crimes. So, and there's a lot of facilities where they don't think that that's important money to be spent. So
that's,
we're
going
to see if we can. Yeah, we're going to see if we can assist that. So,
oh,
that's
great.
Miraclesinrecovery.org.
Now, mm-hmm. Once I go to the website, will I be able to connect up with the radio shows? You're going to have that out there too.
We're actively getting it so that we can archive them all on the. You know, we're just. I have somebody in Boston right now working on a website. So what you'll see is you'll go there and you'll just see a footprint of, you know, a quick bio on myself and a quick bio on Ellen. And by December 5th, we'll have the full website out, the full interactive website out with hopefully.
Oh, cool.
And then
all the radio stuff will be on there. And so I can click on and then I could donate on a regular basis to get some of the literature to the prisons.
Absolutely, and we'll also put a link to your website on our website as well.
Oh, good, good. Anything that would help to get the word out.
Yeah,
I think it's a good work. If you look at it, I've had people, you know, cranky people in recovery look at it because nobody's ever done this before and they're very threatened by me. You know, like, it goes like,
oh,
but
yeah.
I found locally, wrath is cruel and anger is outrageous, but who can stand before envy?
Yeah, right.
And I get a lot of that because it's well written and it's all program. It's spiritual. I mean, it's good information that people usually don't talk about in the meetings, and it's a set, sponsorship is essential. I'm not saying anything that hasn't been said before by people a lot smarter than me. So I don't get what the argument is, but a lot of it is contempt prior to investigation, lack of open-mindedness, and for surely when it comes to me, principles before personalities, you know, like, hey, wait a minute, I don't like this guy. So no matter what he says, I don't like it immediately. What I
believe,
but
you know, the funny thing about that principles before personalities is that, you know, if you internalize that, it's principles before my 15 personalities, so.
Yeah, which one don't you like the most?
Yeah.
I believe people don't like to call in. In general, I think you mentioned it, and I've come to this, that people don't like, the number one fear is speaking in public. Did you ever see that? Mm-hmm. Google's got it.
Yeah.
But speaking in public is the number one fear. It's more so than the death of the body, the death of a child, the loss of a home, wife, or job. So at first blush, it doesn't look like much because those other things have real consequences attached to them until you realize that ridicule is death to the ego. And the ego will sacrifice the body on the altar of pride in a vain attempt to stay alive. The preacher said, vanity is a vanity, all is vanity. Went over that in my church today. You know, we talk about pride. You know, pride goes before the fall. So I chirped up. I says, well, what's pride? And people really don't really know. And I believe pride to me is the disavowing the existence of God or the need for him.
No, and that makes sense when you say it, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've heard pride goes before the fall. Huh. But if you continue the thought, it goes, natural man has been an enemy to God and has been so since the fall. That's pride. Because natural man disavows the existence of God or the need for him. And that's why pride is the number one deadly sin. Everything else follows after that. But anyway, well, this has been a great conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Do you have any last words, Ray, or that you'd like to?
No, just thanks a lot for inviting me on. I know I tried to get on a couple of weeks ago, but my harebrained mind didn't allow me to.
Oh, that's all right.
Time.
Stuff happens. You know, what are you going to do? Life on life's terms. That's some of the terms
This is very essential to do. And, you know, I love to be part of anything talking recovery because, like you said or like we said, you know, people usually don't reach out and speak, but they'll absolutely sit here and listen. And if we can save a life by what we said tonight, then, you know, something, it was well worth the time.
Yeah, thank you. I agree to that. Sure, I think that's what it's all about. Helping the next suffer gets me out of my head, puts me in contact with my higher power, and gives me a happy, joyous, and free life to boot. Hey, how can you pass that up? It goes like this. A self-examined life is not worth living, and a life in recovery is to die for. Harold, you got anything, Harold?
Well, I just wanted to chime in and remind us all that we're responsible to plant the seeds. The results are up to God. God bless you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Harold.
Thank
well,
you,
say
Harold.
Goodnight to everybody. Thanks. Say goodnight to everybody. And remember, if you need sponsorship help or good information, it's a resource site. We just lay the tools at your feet. All we ask you to do is to open your mouth and pass it on. So we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org. Good night.